The Jason Rance Show.
Jason Rance hosts a radio show in Seattle, and he has, as always, the details for us exclusively.
Jason Rance, our Seattle guy, is with us now.
Jason Rance, always great to have you in focus. Thank you.
Hey, Jason, I think you're all right, and thanks for being on the show.
An update on what's happening in your Pacific Northwest.
Democrats are trying to force you to vote. What happens if you don't? A Ballard brewery was damaged by a fire started by a homeless person who was just trying to get warm. Plus, we'll talk with Detective Henry Betts from Tacoma PD. He's the union president, about a dangerous new bill that would stop police from being able to police. We're going to get into those stories and so much more this hour of the Jason Rance Show. So let's get right to it.
The monologue.
So there's a pretty shocking statistic coming out of the city of Tacoma that explains exactly why they're dealing with such a rise in gun violence, but in particular, a rise in juvenile crimes. We've been talking a lot about that over the course of, frankly, the last several months, but certainly within the last month, all of January, there has been an explosion. And now the city is coming out, or the Tacoma Police Department is coming out, having just looked at the data from January 1st through January 2nd, that a gun is being stolen every 48 hours from a parked car. So every 2 days, you're going to have at least one instance of a car break-in in which a gun is stolen. And that does not count all guns that are stolen. They're speaking very specifically about guns stolen from parked vehicles. Here's the public information officer from Tacoma PD, Wendy Haddow, talking with Como TV.
This is only vehicle prowls. Doesn't count guns stolen during burglaries or guns stolen when they steal the entire car and there might be a gun in it. We feel that this is one of the ways that juveniles are getting their hands on guns.
And what's pretty, I think, maybe ironic, is that you've got people who are purchasing guns, most likely for self-defense, in a city that is not particularly safe, and they're leaving their gun unattended in a car. Now, if it's unloaded, left unattended in a car, it's legal. You just have to make sure that it's out of sight, and the vehicle obviously has to be locked. But the thing is, you've got people who are purchasing a gun, keeping it in the car, because they need it for personal protection, and then only to have it stolen by a guy that they're trying to protect themselves from. It is obscene. It is absolutely obscene. Now, if you have a license to carry a concealed weapon, the firearm can be loaded, but you have to follow the same exact rules. Can't be in sight, got to be in a locked vehicle. So that makes it even more dangerous. And I'm assuming you've got a bunch of kids who realize, hey, I can get away with this. Breaking into a car does not send me to jail. The chances of me getting caught breaking into a car in the city of Tacoma with a depleted police force is very, very, very slim to none. And so they're more willing to break into vehicles. And maybe they're not all looking for guns. Maybe they're just looking for cash, looking for sunglasses, looking for things that they could sell. A lot of the juvenile crime that we've been seeing, particularly in Pierce County, has been committed by sort of homeless teenagers or teens who don't really have a stable home and they're couch surfing. We're seeing a lot of that, according to the department. So we've got a clear issue going on, and I don't hear anyone really pushing any sort of plan. I always hear, like, just changing the law to make it so that, well, now you have to put it in a gun storage lockbox, and it has to be tethered by a cable that can be connected to the metal frame of a car. Like, these are ideas that are being put out there, except it's not going after the underlying issue, which is Bruce Smith's point. He owns a gun store in Tacoma.
You don't start with telling people that aren't breaking the law that you have to do something differently,
yes,
but the people that are breaking the law just keep on doing it.
Is that not a great point? Seriously. The only thing that's being suggested here, and I'm reading about it in Como TV on their website, the only thing is being suggested is more of an onus on the gun owner. They're not the ones who, they are the victims here. They're not breaking the law. They're victims. They're having their cars broken into and their guns stolen in other property. How about we focus just a little bit on the underlying reason why there are so many juveniles who think that they can get away with this? And I shouldn't even say think. They can get away with it. They know they can. Why do they know? Because of Democrat past policies. We can pretend all we want that it has nothing to do with it. Structural racism. What other ism do you want to blame? Stigma. Stigma attached to what? You just get left-wing partisans throwing out a whole bunch of buzzwords, not really caring about the impact their policies are having on communities. They refuse to acknowledge them. They refuse. And I don't know if they refuse because they just don't see it, because they've got partisan blinders on. I do believe that ideologues on either side of the aisle can have blinders on, not seeing the damage that they're causing. They don't want to believe it, so they just don't see it. I can't tell if these people are just flat out lying, but it doesn't matter at the end of the day. It truly doesn't matter. The end result matters, and the end result is you're getting cars broken into, guns being stolen, juveniles generally fueling this particular crisis, and no one wants to acknowledge that the light on crime policies, particularly around juveniles, plays a role. An officer can't even question a juvenile unless a lawyer is present, and not a single lawyer will allow any client to speak to cops. So we're just making it easier for these people to get off. It's absolutely absurd, and it's dangerous. Now this.
The interview.
Well, Democrats want to force you to vote, not just get registered, but also turn in your ballot. What happens if you don't? Are they going to send you to jail? Joining me on the line is State Senator Jeff Wilson, Republican from Longview. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me on today.
I think you and I agree. We want people to vote. We will support this as a civic duty. But the idea of compelling someone to vote is absurd.
Absolutely. Compelling somebody to do a vote, and it violates our very cherished First Amendment, of course.
Make the argument for people who aren't connecting the dots to the First Amendment violation.
Absolutely. The First Amendment gives you the right to speak, and of course, the right to not speak. The state Supreme Court has already verified that decision in supporting such a very important amendment, right, that separates us really from the rest of the free world, I'll say.
Well, yeah, and it is speech when you choose not to vote. You are saying for some people it's just laziness, but for others it's I don't support the candidates. I don't support the very system. I don't like that last idea, but I understand you have the right to hold that position.
Absolutely. And it's something that we should cherish. And to be forced into a choice, I think the hypocrisy stands very strong at that point. That is not a choice. And that's why I will, again, always call this very un-American.
Yeah, and I think you're right. Do you know what the impetus was for this particular bill from Democrats?
Absolutely. Of course, let's increase voter turnout. But this is not under the guise of being educational or motivational. This would be under the guise of do it or else. And there's where the wrong part comes in.
What's the or else? What's the punishment, for lack of a better term?
Well, currently the bill 5209 doesn't call for a punishment yet. And well, that alone should set you to be very concerned with.
Well, they don't set a specific punishment, but they do say in the bill, and I'm looking at the summary, anyone who intentionally disfranchises another voter by completing a waiver in the voter's name commits a misdemeanor. And I'm willing to bet that the next thing will be, if you don't vote, it's going to be a misdemeanor.
Of course. And along those lines, we're talking this actually could promote more voter fraud. Just the fear of having a loved one not turn in their ballot may urge you to the point where you would turn in that ballot, and then you would become a criminal for not voting. That's wrong.
That this got a committee hearing versus other way more important bills in the Senate, like the vehicular pursuit ban, is disturbing. This is just disturbing that this bill gets a committee hearing.
Well, it should disturb you. In fact, when you can go so far as to say, look at the voter turnout in North Korea, I mean, come on. Those that turn out are one thing, but what happens to those that don't?
Yeah.
Many countries have tried this. This is one of those ideas that should be a non-starter. It doesn't represent democracy in a constitutional republic.
Well, it does have a lot of supporters. Do you have any idea where this stands right now? I know that Andy Billing is one of the members, Senator Sam Hunt, who is the committee chair. I mean, this has got some big names attached to it.
Absolutely. But the naming of support isn't really going to matter. I hope, and I don't expect this to get to the floor. Maybe the dangerous part of this is just a first attempt, a first try in this session. That's what concerns me. It's sometimes bad bills always come back.
Are other Democrats stepping up and saying this is ludicrous?
Well, we don't really know yet because at this point, we haven't taken it to an executive session yet where we're going to vote on this. It just had a hearing. It's kind of stay tuned. Hopefully, common sense will prevail once we get a committee vote on it.
I'm just still shocked it got a hearing. I get it gets a hearing because Sam Hunt is the senator who introduced it, but that is so silly. And I'll note, I believe Monica Dingra is also one of the sponsors of this.
Yes, and there are many in the Democratic leadership that is supporting this. But I think you struck a very important note is why would you hear this bill when, of course, there are other important bills to hear? Let's pick a topic like emergency gubernatorial power reform.
Mm-hmm.
These bills alone should be heard, and which will draw in countless people willing to talk on this topic versus
Agreed.
Compulsory voting that had nearly 500 people sign up to say no when just a handful said yes.
Where are you guys on the emergency powers limitations bill? It seems like it's dead on arrival.
At this time, it is dead, but it's not dead on session. It is my job as ranking member of state government elections to continue to push for something that is so important. And it's important to have that balance of power.
Yep.
Thus, it's called the Balance Act. Regardless of who the governor is, red or blue, no governor should be without reform and review of power when it comes to emergencies.
Have Democrats shown any inkling to work with Republicans on some of these big ticket items?
Well, on the emergency powers, let's just say not yet. We have hope, but yet we all live and die by calendar here. And on February 17th is really kind of the last time to get that bill heard in the Senate. There's a bill, of course, in the House, and I wish it all the luck. However, I need to remain focused in the Senate to try to get that bill heard. Right now, we're being met with no, not for now.
Yeah, of course, because God forbid we actually limit the powers of a Democrat, even if this doesn't just apply to Democrats. We wish you the best of luck. Senator Jeff Wilson, Republican Longview, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Now this.
The monologue.
There are two lawmakers right now in D.C., one on the House side, one on the Senate side, both Democrats, who are not even shying away from their support of censorship. Adam Schiff, the disgraced congressman from California, and Senator Sheldon Whitehouse from Rhode Island, they this week are demanding answers from Facebook about why they decided to reinstate President Donald Trump's account, not just on Facebook, but also on Instagram. And they say that it's an inexplicable move. So we got this word last week. We brought it to you last week that the president's suspension across the platforms from Meta, the parent company, has been rescinded, or at least it was supposed to end when it did last week. It was supposed to only last for 3 years or 2.5 years, whatever the number was. And we haven't actually seen anything yet posted from Donald Trump, who's still using Truth Social, which is the company that he has ownership stake in. But we learned this week that Schiff and Whitehouse and undoubtedly other Democrats are apoplectic about this. They think that this is wrong. Now, of course, they don't think about the First Amendment implications of sending a letter to Meta demanding that they explain why they're allowing a former president and current presidential candidate from going back on their platform. They seem to be okay with the censorship. And yes, it would be censorship if it is the government putting pressure on Facebook to ban the president again. So they wrote in their letter to Nick Clegg. He's the president of global affairs over at Meta, and he's the one who posted the original note saying that the Trump suspension was being lifted. They write, based on Meta's previous statements on standards for allowing Trump back on the platform, his account should not have been reinstated. They say that Trump has, quote, continued to post harmful election content on Truth Social that would likely violate Facebook's policies. And we have every reason to believe he will bring similar conspiratorial rhetoric back to Facebook, too. So what he's saying here is obviously subjective, but let's just say it was 100% fact. They're arguing, and they know that this is illegal. They're arguing that a company, by force of government, should ban someone based on speech he hasn't yet made. That's what they're asking for. Prior restraint. And we know that the government can't do that when it comes to journalism, for example, reports. They can't stop me from writing something that they think will be illegal in some way or offensive in some way. There's a very limited scope as to whether or not I have like state secrets that I shouldn't have access to, that the government has a stake in and could maybe prevent it from being published. But what we're talking about here is obviously not that. They're saying that he's going to violate, the former president going to violate Facebook terms of service. And maybe he would. Maybe he would. But you're not supposed to, especially from the government perspective, tell a company that because you think someone's going to do something that he hasn't yet done, they should go ahead and censor his speech. This is absurd. And it's transparent. They don't want to see Trump anywhere because they realize that his message can resonate with voters. And they still see him as a threat. I don't think he's the threat that he once was. I think Ron DeSantis is a bigger threat to the Democrat Party. And no doubt we've seen the silly attacks on him. And that's going to continue. But they still see Trump as a threat. And they're right to see him as a little bit of a threat, no doubt. Especially if he goes up against Joe Biden again for president. And so they're trying to stop him from having a voice. Because the larger his voice, the more voters hear it or read it or see it. And the more likely they might be to vote for him. Now, I also think the opposite is true. But Schiff and White House don't seem to care. They are obsessed with Trump, particularly Adam Schiff. Obsessed with Trump. They wrote in their letter how Facebook could reinstate his account given all the additional content on Truth Social that would likely have resulted in a brand new suspension if it were on your platform is inexplicable. Well, that's not exactly how it works. Some folks know what the rule. If you have different rules on different platforms, you're going to expect different content. Now, again, whether or not Trump violates the Facebook rules, and he would be silly to knowingly violate the rules on Facebook, given that it is a major platform to get content out there. But if you're setting aside what the rules are on Facebook versus what the rules are on Truth Social, of course you're going to get a little bit of different content. So if you're allowed to, you know, post questions about the vaccine, which folks on the left don't want you to post, you're going to do that on Truth Social. If you're not allowed to do that on Facebook or YouTube or Instagram, wherever, then you probably won't unless you're looking to get suspended. Now, of course, on top of that, the letter also added that they wanted to get a briefing on what Meta is doing to, quote, uphold election integrity and not allow their platform to be used to spread conspiracy theories and election lies. Oh, okay. What they really mean is so that no one questions anything about an election. By the way, under this policy, the way that Schiff and White House want it to be interpreted, my story yesterday that I posted at KTTH.com would not be allowed to be posted, and I would get kicked off of Facebook. Because in yesterday's blog post, again, it's at KTTH.com, I talk about how Democrats are trying to get rid of the one election security measure, the signature verification. They want to get rid of it, claiming that it's racist, because everything is racist. But under how Schiff and White House interpret election misinformation or lies or conspiracy theories, my content would be banned. So actually, that should give you a reminder. Go check it out before it actually does get banned. Go to ktth.com or head on over to my Facebook page, Twitter page. I've got it all posted. Just to make it easier, text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770, and I'll send you a link to my piece. Now this.
The interview.
Oh, all those changes over at CNN not looking so good from a ratings perspective, or really a content perspective. Just not looking good. Curtis Houck from Newsbusters joins me now. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, good to be with you, my friend.
How bad are the ratings?
They are not great. They are the worst ratings in 9 years. Just 444,000 viewers in prime time and 93,000 in the key 25 to 54 demographic. But in the total day, it's even worse. 417,000 and 80,000 in the demo. So you got to go back to May of 2014,
wow.
Whereas Fox News is more than double that. It's four times larger, 2 million viewers and 250,000 in the demo. MSNBC just under 1 million total. So things are not well. You know, CNN this morning was this big show that Chris Licht put together, demoting, you know, Don Lemon and bringing Poppy Harlow and former conservative reporter Caitlin Collins to this morning show. It continues to be the least watched show of the three major cable networks. And, you know, Chris Licht talked a really good game when he came on. We need to cover a variety of stories. We can't just focus on Trump all day. We need to have more journalists. We need to have less punditry on CNN. We need to do the news again, basically. Return CNN to what people think it used to be. And a few months in, 6 months plus in, we're not really seeing that at all. And, you know, about a year since they lost Jeff Zucker.
Mm-hmm.
The inmates are still running the asylum. The rot still runs deep. It feels very nice. You got rid of Brian Stelter and John Harwood and Chris Cillizza, but there's still a lot of work to do.
Yeah, I mean, look, when they made Don Lemon the face of their new morning show, he's one of the most partisan folks on the network still. And that told, I think, everyone that Chris Licht isn't entirely serious, or at least doesn't quite know what he wants to do, despite some of the comments that he's made, including this week, making comments about how he doesn't want hyper-partisanship on the air. But that doesn't explain Don Lemon. And this morning show, it seems like they don't know what they want it to be. He's out there with his little hoodie around the blazer, which is, oh, we're a cool, hip morning show. Except they're still doing all of the anti-Republican talking points.
Right. It's continuing to see Republicans, conservatives, as enemies of the state. I mean, the reporting from the tabloids is that Don Lemon saw himself as the star of this show, and these two women were just going to be his backup dancers in their second fiddle. And not surprisingly, they don't feel that way. In particular, Caitlin Collins, you know, she's not even 30 years old. She's still in her mid-20s. She didn't make this jump just to, like, be Don Lemon's, you know, sideshow.
Mm-hmm.
But you also look at Chris Licht again, as you point out, the rhetoric is not matching the action. You know, Puck has Dylan Byers, former CNN media reporter, used to work with Stelter and Darcy, is reporting that he's desperate to try and get Gayle King to come over to do a one-day-a-week show on CNN. Things for Chris Wallace aren't doing that well either. Chris Wallace is getting just absolutely, like, bamboozled in the ratings battle. You know, he thought he was going to put on this amazing news magazine show that everybody's going to tune into. No one cares.
Yeah, no,
so I don't see why Gayle King would work either.
Well, and they've got Bill Maher now on Fridays. Is that just his normal HBO show that they're airing?
What's going to happen is it's going to be a real-time overtime.
So that second web-only hour that he does or whatever it is.
It's only 10 minutes. It's less than that. It's only about 10 minutes.
Okay.
It's only about 10 minutes, as per my boss, Brent Baker, who just, you know, watches Bill Maher's show and tweets it for amusement purposes and notices that, yeah, I mean, this is the web-only option. So Laura Coates, who's been hosting, you know, former, I believe, Obama, you know, U.S. attorney, she's going to, for the prosecutor, she'll toss to this, watch this video, and then she'll come back, conceivably, until midnight, which is just kind of weird how that's going to work for just as a viewer.
Yep.
Even if you like Bill Maher, you for some reason like what Laura Coates is doing, it's just the kind of whiplash back and forth just in terms of a presentation. I don't really know how that's going to work.
Has there been a single success story for Chris Licht?
Well, I mean, you have to at least give him, like, credit. You know, he doesn't get a complete F, you know, because he got rid of Brian Stelter, he got rid of John Harwood, he got rid of Chris Cillizza. He cut down a lot of contracts for paid contributors. Mm-hmm. So, like, he got rid of John Kasich and he got rid of Hillary Rosen. He elevated Scott Jennings, who's the closest thing to an actual conservative there. I would argue he's a good guy. He's an actual conservative.
Who's the gun
people
guy?
May not like him. He may not like him because he worked for McConnell. You may not like him. But he is not Alyssa Farah. I should point that out. You know.
Well, they also hired Stephen Gutowski. Is that his name?
And Stephen Gutowski from the Reload, who used to work here at the Media Research Center. You know, they brought him on. Mm-hmm. But in contrast, they brought Mondaire Jones on. Yeah, they brought Jeff Duncan from Georgia on. You know. So again, you ask yourself, like, what is Chris Licht trying to do? Again, his rhetoric is not matching his actions, and you still have employees leaking to Dylan Byers and others that how much they hate their lives because Licht is not dear leader Jeff Zucker with his office in the middle of the newsroom telling them what to do, holding their hand like they're in elementary school.
Yeah, they need to do a big purge over there and get some actual journalists. We've been talking with Curtis Houck, managing editor over at Newsbusters. Check him out on Twitter, Curtis Houck, H-O-U-C-K. Thank you so much, my friend. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks. Take care.
You're listening to The Jason Rant Show.
The Jason Rant Show.
Here to react, Seattle talk radio host Jason Rant.
And the rise of soft on crime laws and policies have made it worse.
Our man in the Pacific Northwest, Jason Rant, is on that.
And you keep on bringing her these extraordinary stories from Seattle. It's amazing.
Long form.
So yet another anti-police bill was introduced by Democrats. It's meant to abolish police by effectively telling them they can no longer police. House Bill 1513 will ban police officers from making most traffic stops. It does way more than that as well. Joining me to discuss is the Tacoma PD Union President, Henry Betts. Welcome back to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Jason.
So you've had an opportunity to review 1513. Let's talk about the bigger issue within it, which is a ban on most traffic stops. It bans stops for any non-moving violation, driving with a suspended or revoked license, for a misdemeanor warrant. If you're missing your front windshield, you cannot be pulled over.
Yeah, it's as bad as you make it sound.
What is the effect that this would have on public safety?
Well, it's funny to me because it's titled like it's to improve traffic safety and to help save people and to prevent accidents and dangers on the roadway, but it's going to have the opposite effect. It's going to do exactly what it says it's not, which is it's going to depolice. It's telling, if this was adopted by the legislature, it's telling cops that we don't want you to go out and police. We don't want you to make traffic safer. We don't want you to make those contacts, those traffic stops. And to the point, you hit the nail on the head, not even to make arrests when arrests are warranted. So you have an arrest warrant out for your person, and they want us to ignore that. Suspended driving, so your license has been revoked or suspended by a judge for some reason, and now they want us just to ignore that crime in progress if we see it and we know it's you and it's on a computer, just to walk away from it.
Yeah, and let's just assume for a second you've got a car, suspended license, and you've got a bunch of bullet holes in it. We are being told that officers should not pull that person over.
Yeah, that's the way the law is written, is that if you're aware of a crime like suspended driving or a misdemeanor warrant, that we should just walk away from that and ignore that, not be allowed to make a stop for that reason. Now, if there was a moving violation, we could still make the stop. But the law itself actually goes further, and it talks about limiting what conversation we can have while we're on a legitimate stop. So let's say there was still a moving violation I could stop somebody on. Now the law is telling me, well, you can only talk about the reason for the stop. So I can't engage in conversation on any other topics, like how'd you get those bullet holes or is anybody injured from those bullet holes? When did that happen? Not allowed to talk about it,
yeah.
Right? And you know, taking a step back, even if I could get over some of that, the big one to me that jumps out at me is the DUI enforcement. And it might not be clear to a lot of your listeners, but a lot of times when we interact on a traffic stop, we discover that somebody's impaired through those conversations. It's not always a textbook, classic, car all over the roadway, mm-hmm. Obvious DUI. A lot of times there are people, suffering through alcoholism that are drunk in the morning. They're drunk in the afternoon habitually, and we contact them, and their driving might not have been that bad. But when we talk to them, we might smell a little bit of odor, and then we might hear slurred speech and some other indicators, and we realize they're impaired. By telling cops you don't want us to talk to drivers, you're basically going to limit a whole bunch of those DUI arrests, and DUI collisions are some of the worst causes of our fatalities and our serious injuries.
Which, by the way, is going up. We've seen a surge in deaths on the road.
Huge. It's absolutely skyrocketing with our fatality collisions. And anecdotally, just as I drive around Western Washington and I talk to community members about this, everybody has the same feeling of there's just so much reckless driving now. There's so many cars without tags or plates. There's so much more blatant disregard for our normal traffic laws that the community groups I talk with, it doesn't seem like they want less enforcement. I keep hearing the "why aren't the cops stopping people" argument. This goes the other way. It tells us don't do any enforcement at a time when it seems like people are clamoring for us to take enforcement and limit the reckless driving and all these other things.
Well, and the funny thing is there's not a lot of folks out there who are making those complaints who understand that your hands are tied. They blame you. They think it's the cop's fault for not pulling someone over without understanding it's due to a Democrat passed law.
Oh, yeah. And now it goes back to your pursuit mistakes from before where, you know, the legislature made a lot of mistakes 2 or 3 years ago. We're still trying to correct a lot of those mistakes. But now a lot of times when we do have a reason to stop somebody, they just take off on us. That is way more prevalent than it was 5 or 10 years ago, which creates more danger for traffic around it when that happens. Yeah. But all this comes back to decisions that are made with laws like this one.
But I'm told none of what we're experiencing on the roads, any of the crime that we're seeing, none of it is connected to any of the laws. That's what we're being told by some Democrats.
Yeah.
We're talking with Tacoma PD Union President, Local 6 President, Henry Betts. This bill does more than just prevent you from having certain conversations and from pulling people over. It also changes the way you would be able to search a vehicle. Take us through that.
Oh, yeah. There's an attempt to limit the ability to do consent searches or limit when we can search a car. And, limiting that, a lot of times we're able to get evidence from a crime and get it out of a vehicle with the owner of the vehicle's permission, a consented search, rather than pulling the car, putting it into impound or to a secured warehouse, and then later serving a warrant on it to get the same evidence. On a lot of lower level things, we can settle it very quickly and get the driver back on the road, and they can deal with whatever the issue was later through them giving us permission to do that search right then and there and be done with it. It's so misguided here on the idea that you don't want me to talk to people and try to work through a problem. You would rather us just say, okay, well, anytime we get to the idea that we could write a warrant and get evidence out of a car, that we should always just pull the car, maybe take a week with the car and serve a search warrant on it. That's not the right answer. A lot of times we can fix problems right away and be done with it, and that actually helps the driver of the car. And it's just taking all discretion, all ability to engage with the public on matters away from the police. And that's contradictory to what we hear at a lot of our project piece and a lot of our engagement with the public. They're telling us they want more engagement. So they want more interaction between the cops and the public. And this is pushing toward, if you took the writing the way it is, it's pushing toward a very computerized, just let me write up the offense, here's your ticket, have a nice day, or this is the crime we suspect you of, so we're seizing your car, we're going to serve a search warrant on it, and it'll be released at a later time. But no personal interaction. Most people want personal interaction. They want to talk through the problem. They want to understand why we're interacting with them and what it is from our perspective. They want to be heard, and they want us to listen as well, not just to tell them what our perspective is. And we know that, and there's a long way to go for any profession on being better at the interactions with people. But to just limit it and say it's all going to be computerized and very in a box, it's misguided at best.
Well, and they're also just basically trying to disincentivize you from doing any traffic stops, even under this law, that would be permitted. If you go ahead and pull someone over, you have a conversation with them, and you decide to give them a warning for whatever it is they did, do you put in a detailed report after that?
No.
Okay.
No.
You would under this law. Yeah. Under this law specifically says for every single time you stop someone or detain someone, you are putting together a very detailed report.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, and so it is. It is totally disincentivizing proactive police work, and they want it pushes it to say, don't get involved in that. And the sometimes you can and sometimes you can't mentality on laws don't work well for the people involved in actually making decisions to enforce them. I don't want to be confused about whether or not I can or can't stop a car. I should be well versed in what the traffic laws are, mm-hmm. and I should know, okay, that's a violation I can stop, and I should go make the stop. If there's not a bigger crime pending or some other thing I should be working on, once we start playing with the laws and adjusting them to say sometimes you can and sometimes you can't, it makes it a very bad gray area where it's difficult to go forth and enforce those correctly. The laws should stay as they are, and that we go enforce them. And sometimes there's discretion in that, and they want to move away from discretion. Mm-hmm. But once you make it a gray area, you'll see law enforcement basically pull back away from that gray area. You don't want to get involved in something that turns out to be a big deal when you're not quite sure where you were when you started. You want it to be clear when you started that this was the violation and I had a right to stop them. Once you make it gray and messy, you'll see law enforcement pull back and not want to get involved.
Yeah, and I would argue they're not only taking away your discretion, they're giving the discretion to Democrat lawmakers. They're the ones who are using their own discretion to determine how you're going to respond to situations that they have no clue about, that they have no training in whatsoever, that they're coming at just from this partisan anti-police stance. And, you know, earlier this hour, we talked about the data that came out from the Tacoma PD that basically every 48 hours a gun is stolen from a parked vehicle. What would this law do to your ability to take guns off the streets?
Yeah, it would just hem it up worse. I mean, it's already gummed up really bad with our ability based on case law and the limits that are placed on us to remove guns from the equation. We get a lot less gun seizures than we used to, especially in proactive stops. It's flagrant right now with how many people on the streets have guns that are then used in crimes. But the possession of it to start with is way more common prior to the crime occurring than it was, you know, 10 years ago. This would limit that even more, right? Because if we're probably doing a lot less searches of vehicles than we were 10 or 15 years ago. This would just limit that more. And then so you're going to produce less guns with less searches.
Should local agencies, or I should say police unions or law enforcement unions, should y'all be getting more political when there are elections?
You know, it's difficult. I think we try to walk a fine line between not being over political. You know, there should be kind of a little separation between the people who enforce the laws and the politics of legislation and everything else. But I think in today's day and age, there's not a lot of room to maneuver left. Like, we're forced mm-hmm. into a position that we have to become more. We have to go out and lobby. And really, that lobbying consists of trying to tell the lawmakers what it's like for the people who actually do the work. It's not so much as trying to get things pushed one way or the other way. It's just to provide them the information of what the truth is for the people doing the work. And I think when they miss that element or they don't include that in it, they make bad decisions. Most of us would. If I don't know the information, I make a decision. The chances of me getting it right are way less. And so, and on that side, absolutely, we need to have lawmakers that understand what it is from the people doing the work and the impacts of these decisions.
Tacoma PD Local 6 President Henry Betts, thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
Yep, absolutely. Thanks for having me, Jason.
You're listening to The Jason Rant Show.
The Jason Rant Show.
Let's bring in our man in the Pacific Northwest, KTTH, Seattle talk radio host Jason Rantz. Great to have you with us to tell people a little bit more about this.
Jason Rantz is in focus now.
Jason Rantz, thank you for your reporting on that.
The quick hit.
So we have an update on the Tenino story. We've been covering this very extensively. Thankfully, there's some more outlets that are now taking it seriously, where the state tried to secretly sneak in a sex offender, up to five sex offenders, in this small location in Tenino, run by Supreme Living. It is not secured by any stretch. It's near a location, a recreation area for children. It's near a playground now. It's within a few yards from a school bus stop. And no one at the state wanted to be open about this. They tried to sneak it through. Finally, some folks who actually live in Tenino, they learned about it. they contacted their county, either through the commissioners or through the sheriff, Derek Sanders, and they started to push back. And today is the day that there is supposed to be the official move-in of the sex offender, the pedophile, that we've been talking about. But the Thurston County leadership has been doing their level best to try to prevent this from happening. And I don't know if they'll be able to fully prevent it, but they're definitely slowing it down. You have Thurston County Sheriff's Lieutenant Cameron Simper saying, whoa, 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 whoa. Before y'all move in, you have to understand, you've got to meet some county conditions.
At this point, none of those offenders have registered with our office, which would be required if they were to live there.
Now we find out the Department of Corrections has confirmed that the move-in has been delayed, that the county and the facility staff are going to work together on zoning, on some environmental concerns. Thurston County Manager Ramiro Chavez says the housing might not meet health and safety requirements. And again, this would have been known had this whole process not be completed on the DL. They did not want, the state did not want to go through any of these rules. You and I have to go through all the rules. We have to follow all the rules and all of the specific, you know, 12 steps before you're even allowed to submit an application to add something to your property. But what they were hoping to do in Tenino was just set this place up. No one was the wiser. And once it was set up, once the sex offenders were housed, everyone would not have fought back too hard, and they wouldn't have been released back to McNeil so they can make these changes. This was always a scam. And in particular, Ramiro Chavez says the water supply, the septic and sewage systems, they have to be up to code before this facility can even open.
I have not heard whether they're planning to comply with those permits, and meeting those requirements by today is not feasible.
It's not feasible by today. So the county stepped up and said, no, 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 no. We're going to throw in front of you every obstacle within our power. That's what state leadership does, or county leadership does. We don't get state leadership. State leadership allows this to happen. Governor Jay Inslee pretending to care about this. I'm a Tenino boy, he said. I bought my first house in Tenino. Uh-huh. State officials today, just within the next few minutes, right at 6 o'clock, they're going to be hosting a webinar discussing the plans. I will be monitoring that. We'll see whether or not they even acknowledge that this is a controversy. But up until this point, they haven't really acknowledged it as a controversy. Again, they hoped it would not get any media coverage. They hoped the people of Tenino would not know what was going on. They would hope that once they did find out, they would say to themselves, the Tenino residents, man, we're not going to win. We can't go up against DSHS. We can't go up against the Inslee administration. We're just residents in Tenino. What can we do? Well, they can do a lot. And this is proof of that. I am so, so proud that they stepped up in the way that they did. But here's the deal, and here's the truth. The state is still hoping y'all forget. They might just go through with this process to a point and then just move the people in anyway. Because the second that this community stops paying attention, the second that the county leadership stops paying attention, what's going to end up happening is they'll try to sneak it back in. You cannot relent. You cannot relent. The pressure has to be consistent. The people have to keep an eagle eye on this particular location. Because the second that you don't, the second that you pay attention to something else, and you know what? There's going to be a lot of something else's for you to pay attention to. You're going to have your normal stuff going on with your family, with yourself. You're going to have other important issues, like policing, for example, that are being discussed right now in Olympia. And I guarantee you there are a lot of people in Tenino who are upset with the direction of the state. The second that they take their eye off of this particular issue is when the state will strike. Because once they get people in, they're not coming back out. Unless, of course, they break out, which is very easy to do, and then commit another sex offense. This entire process did not have to unfold this way. This was a choice. the Department of Social and Health Services, DSHS, they chose to go through with this project in this way, in secret, without any meaningful community engagement. Supreme Living, I don't necessarily blame them. Although we did hear from the previous owner of the property that they were told it was going to be a home for at-risk youth. Isn't that what they were told? Oh, this is going to be for at-risk youth. Their parents are out of the system. We don't know. We're trying to care for these kids. Isn't that what she said? Now, maybe that was the original intent, and Supreme Living decided to change their minds for whatever reasons, and they did it in good faith. They didn't respond to requests for comments, though, when I reached out. So that wasn't done in good faith. So I'm very curious as to what will be said today at 6 o'clock, so just in a few moments. We'll tell you exactly what is said tomorrow. But this is absurd. Shame on the state. Just absolute shame on the state. A lot of shame being cast on today's show. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to weigh in and send me a text. 1-800-465-8770. One more hour of the Jason Rancho coming up.